Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet, I climbed out up inside. The choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart. Although I was a
well, good morning. Hey, how are you? Good morning, everybody. It's 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, we're here talking about your cars. The first hour is going to be really special, because we are going to talk about tires and all the other stuff, and you'll think, oh, tires is a boring subject, but I promise you it won't be. If you want to join us about tires, if you want to talk about tires, we're going to talk about a variety of things. We're going to talk about nitrogen, inflation, heat, what people do when a tire blows that causes them significant personal injury, what you should do, what you shouldn't do, and what are some of the symptoms before a tire may blow that you might want to know. We're going to talk about a lot of that kind of stuff. This portion of Under the Hood, though, is brought to you by Quality Transmission. If you have an issue with the transmission, Bob or Steve at Quality Transmission is who you should call. They have many years of experience, and they're not going to say that they have to take your transmission apart for $300 or $400 or $500 or $600 or $700 before they can give you an estimate. Folks, When you don't do that, it's because you're experienced. They can look at your transmission, and they know what the low and the high is going to be. You'll know that before they take your transmission apart. However, they tell me that not even half of the transmission problems that come in are actually related to a complete overhaul. So that's good news. Quality Transmission is located in Tempe. They're north of University on McClintock, and no matter where you live, they're worth the drive. That's Quality Transmission in Tempe. John Dawes is with me right now, and John is here. And I just wanted to know, your probation officer called me, and
yeah, right.
And he said I can only have you for an hour. John and I have worked. We're both experts that work with insurance companies, with police departments, public defender's office. In civil litigation, sometimes we're on the plaintiff's side, sometimes we're on the defense side. John does tires, and really does tires well. I do the mechanical side, and John does the tires. So I want to start off with, John's a consultant for insurance companies, consultant for attorneys, personal injury attorneys.
Yeah.
And what's the typical question you get that they ask you?
Well, the typical question is, why did this tire fail?
Okay. And you, what is it that you need to do to answer that question? What do you typically do first?
Well, the first thing is try to figure out what happened in the accident to get an understanding about whether the tire failed on the road or failed as part of the accident or something like that. And then what I do is what's called an inspection, but basically it's put my hands and eyes on the tire, look at all the pieces, try to put it back together like a big 3D jigsaw puzzle.
Okay.
to understand how the tire came apart.
And where did you get this history? Who did you work for?
Okay, I worked for Michelin for 20 years.
Okay.
And then another 10 years or another 4 years for a company called Exponent, where I basically looked at accident reconstruction and crash testing and things like that. But most of my tire experience comes from Michelin.
Now, when you were at Michelin, where did you start and where did you end up?
Okay.
I want to hear that you were in the garage running the forklift and then you got your degree. That's what I want to hear, but you tell me the truth.
No, I was I started out at Michelin. Actually, I spent about 2 years in France, and the first couple of weeks I was there, they had me on a tire machine building tires.
Oh.
Which was kind of an experience. Most people don't know that tires are basically handmade. They're assembled by an operator who puts all the pieces together before they go into a curing press. So I spent some time in France in training, and then I was basically responsible for making equipment to manufacture tires
for
the plants in the U.S. and Canada. From there, I went into quality control for a couple of years, and so, you know, did a lot of tire measurement, you know, uniformity, rolling resistance, all those kinds of things that are
important.
Measured on tires.
Yeah.
And then I spent a couple of years as a tire designer.
Okay.
And then I went back into process engineering for the last 4 years I was there.
Now, you were part of the team that did the Firestone 721?
Different company.
I'm just kidding. can you hang your hat on anything that we'll recognize on the machine?
I don't know. Those aficionados of electric vehicles might recognize the original General Motors Impact, the EV1.
Uh-huh.
The tires on that car were my tires.
Okay.
They were... high-pressure, low-rolling-resistance tires with sealant in them because the car didn't carry a spare tire.
Mm-hmm. Okay, now what kind of sealant did you put in there? Is it something that we can buy off the shelf today?
No, this was a special goo that was developed by B.F. Goodrich and was applied to the inside of the tire after the tire's made.
Okay, now did it stay there or did it goo up at the bottom overnight where it stayed on the bottom of the tire?
Oh, it stayed there. This stuff was so thick.
Uh-huh.
And sticky.
Snotty. You almost said snotty.
No. It doesn't run at all. You lay it in the tire, and it just stays there.
Now, how big of it? Could a typical pencil going through the tread? No problem. How big? I mean, a penny, a dime, a nickel, a quarter? How big of a hole?
Well, you test it with nails.
Okay.
Right. So I don't really know how big an object could penetrate the tire.
Okay.
Obviously, at some point, you start to distort the steel cord, and you make the tire not usable. But,
okay. All right. So, real quick now, I want to talk about from the inside to the outside. I'm going to spot you the inner liner.
Okay.
Now, the inner liner is just the solid, what appears to be a solid piece of rubber on the inside of the tire that's very smooth.
Well, not necessarily. Most inner liners have some kind of texture. They look like what's called toad skin.
Okay.
They're kind of a rough stuff on the...
You're right.
Yeah.
And we have to buff the toad skin to put the patch on it.
There you go.
Okay.
When you're doing a repair.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. All right.
So, a tire basically is made up of layers, and the inner liner serves as the inner tube for a tubeless tire.
Okay.
And then you have what's called body ply, which is comprised of polyester cords that basically look like kite string in rubber, and they go from bead to bead.
Okay, that's side to side as opposed to longitudinally around the tire.
Right.
Okay.
So they wrap around the bead
at
each flange of the rim, and they hold the air pressure.
Okay, and the bead is a series of steel wires together that make a circle that gives the tire the stability on the wheel.
Right.
Okay, how many wires are in there?
In a Michelin tire, there's only one. It wraps around a whole bunch of times.
Okay.
Some people use multiple strands.
Okay.
So they maybe have five strands that are wrapped around six times.
Okay.
If
it's one, if it's one wire that's wrapped around in a Michelin, how many times is the wrap? Five, six?
Well, there typically be six or seven.
Okay.
Okay. On a heavy truck tire, there may be 30 or 40 wraps.
Oh, you're kidding.
Uh-huh.
So for somebody to break a bead on a tire machine, they worked real hard at it.
Oh, yes.
Okay. Okay.
Oh, yeah.
And folks, the bead, it's like a long piece of garden hose that has these steel wires in it, five or six on a passenger car or whatever it is. And when you break the bead, then instead of the garden hose being really difficult to bend in a U, it just bends and right there and crimps.
Right.
And you know that the bead's gone.
Yeah.
And you know you just bought a new tire.
Exactly.
Okay. So you got the inner liner, then you've got these plies that run bead to bead. They're usually polyester. Now, they used to be nylon, and that caused a flat spot in the tire.
Well, they used to be nylon or rayon. Rayon's kind of bad for the environment, so you don't see that in the U.S.
Okay.
And nylon's really bad for flat spotting.
Okay.
Yeah.
So after we get done with the polyester side to side, then what's next?
Well, then you have the sidewalls, the sidewall rubber that protects those cords from curbs and things like that.
Is there white underneath every sidewall?
No. If it's a purely black wall tire, both sides, there will not be any white under.
But isn't that how they make white walls? They put white and then they groove it out with the machine?
Yeah. When you make a white wall tire, you put a layer of white rubber underneath the sidewall, and then it's got a profile from the mold, and then you grind it off to expose the white rubber.
Okay.
That's how you get a nice clean line.
All right.
Okay.
I thought maybe everything had that white in there, and I wondered why. When you hit the curb, my wife, she would have white walls whether I wanted her to have them or not.
Well, the white rubber is really expensive.
Okay.
It's got titanium dioxide in it. That's the white.
Okay.
So
you don't put it there
if you don't need it.
All right. Okay. So then we've got the sidewalls. Now what do we put on next?
Well, on the next part would be the tread pieces, okay. or it would be the steel belt reinforcements.
Okay.
The steel belt reinforcements are typically in a passenger tire, two layers, going at different angles.
Okay.
So you have one layer, say, at if you're looking in the line of the tire, one layer at minus 30 degrees and
all right,
another
that's,
layer at
we're
going
to do it for from 2 to 8, on the clock. 2
oh,
o'clock
okay.
to 8 o'clock?
Yeah, 2 o'clock to 8 o'clock, and then
okay.
the other going from, say, 10 to 4.
4. Okay.
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 Like that.
We're in radio. They can't see our hands.
Well, that's true. That's true.
So, okay. Now, this...
They can't see how I'm dressed?
No. No.
Okay, geez.
I wish you would have shaved. But so we have this... Now, my perception of this steel belt is you take a big pan of liquefied black rubber, and you put a screen from a screen door within that rubber, and you position it perfectly in the middle of that rubber, and then you let it cool. How close am I?
No, you're way off.
But physically, from a visual standpoint,
if you consider that the wires are triangular instead of square like a screen door,
okay.
there's triangles in
okay.
there.
Okay. All right.
You're pretty close. That's what it would look like if you cut the tire apart.
Okay. All right.
Okay. And they go from the one edge of the tread to the other edge of the tread.
Okay.
So they reinforce the tread area.
Where are they the strongest? Are they on the shoulder of the tire where the sidewall meets the tread, or is the more steel on the tread portion of the tire?
Well, the tread's it's under the tread portion of the tire.
Okay.
So out near the edge of the tread, there's going to be the inner or the first steel belt that's put down is going to be wider than the second one.
Okay.
And that gives you some strain relief.
Okay.
And it's better for the stress in the tire.
Okay, they didn't used to do that because when steel belted radials first came out, when you ran them inflated and properly, the steel would stick through the tread on the side of the tire. And that's before you guys wrapped this steel down, right?
Yeah.
Is that
well,
how it worked?
No, the vast majority of tires are... basically, only have two belts.
Okay.
They don't have a nylon overlap.
How about trucks?
Trucks have maybe four steel belts.
Okay. Okay. Even the big 22.5s.
Exactly.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about patching or plugging a tire.
Okay.
And you can tell us what you think we've done wrong as an industry, the repair industry. I'll represent the repair industry. And this is where we're going to have an argument. Because, and actually, we're not going to really, but it's really interesting because we're going to have to really be on our toes because we have to describe this without the benefit of a picture.
Oh, my.
And so we're going to start with a nail going through the tire, okay? And then we're going to describe the damage, and then we're going to describe why this repair won't work or this repair will work and all that other kind
okay.
of stuff, all right? When we come back, we're going to do that. If you have a tire question you want to ask the best expert I've ever met, 602-508-0960.
Raised up from under my hood and he shook his head.
Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem. My guest is John Dawes. John is a tire expert, and he knows how to build them. He knows how they fail, and he is one of those experts that doesn't tell. Well, he's like me. We don't tell them what they want to hear. We tell them what the truth is, and sometimes they don't like that, and they transfer you from a testifying expert to a consulting expert.
There you go.
And that tells everybody that you didn't tell them what they wanted to hear. All righty. Let's take Tom real quick. Tom, good morning to you. How can we help you today?
Good morning. I'm close to tires, but I'm worried about brake dust. How do you keep the brake dust off of the front rims?
There's really no way. It has more. Are you driving a Mercedes by chance?
No, Toyota.
Okay. There's no way. The brake dust is a process of the brake pad you're using. The way to get rid of it is just not use that brand anymore. Now, there's Raybestos and Wagner, Bendix, and then there's 10 or 12 other major brands of brake pads. The softer ones never squeal, but they shed like crazy, and they don't last very long. The harder ones have a tendency to squeal, they don't shed, and they last forever. Those are and everything in between, those are your choices. Now, some guys will use spray wax on their wheels, but they tell me later it doesn't make any difference. The dust will still be there. There's some big metal things that you can slide over your rotors and take your tire and wheel off, put this big metal shield on, and then put your tire back on. However, that disrupts the air across your brakes that's supposed to cool your brakes, and all it does is deflect the dust elsewhere. But it can have a negative effect on the performance of your brakes, especially if, like, you're running from the police or something.
So the best thing to do would just be put on a harder brake pad.
Yeah, just tell them you want a little harder brake pad and something that doesn't shed. Now, here's the deal. Let me ask you a question. If you were a shop owner, would you put pads on that last a long time or a short time?
Well, it depends on whether I want to keep the customer or not.
No, it depends on whether your financial situation is good or not. Our industry is really looking bad right now, and we're going to discuss that in the second hour. But right now, those kinds of decisions are made every day in every city in the United States, and I can assure you that the majority of them are, hey, if I do a soft pad and dirty up their wheels, I'll get more business out of this customer. So that, but you have the option. You have the option of, say, give me the menu and tell me what the soft, the middle, and the high is, and you can do that yourself, okay?
Well, I noticed you had Ray Bestis on your website.
And that is one of the pads. We sell all of them. We sell Wagner. We sell Bendix. We sell Ray Bestis. We also sell a variety of Akebono, which is the import line, and we really like that. And dust is not a concern on the Akebono line.
They don't dust off?
No, not none of our customers have complained about it. Now, you got to know, too, Joe, that if you can take a tissue on any car, and you're going to get some brake dust off the wheel. But if talking about turning the wheel black, That's what I'm talking about.
That's what I'm concerned about, because when I just took them off, they were just covered.
Yeah. Yeah, it's water-soluble, so you just wash it off. But, like I said, you can just change the brand of the pads next time, okay?
Oh, okay, be down to see you next week.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. And so we get a nail. The nail is, we're going to make it easy for you, because I don't want to tax your head today. It's going straight through the tread. And it goes through the tread. It goes through those two layers of screen door with triangular holes.
Yep.
Then it goes through the kite string polyester, and then it goes through the inner liner.
Right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And now I'm going to plug that tire.
Okay.
And I'm going to take the plug, and I'm going to take this piece of rope, and I'm going to dip it in glue.
No. Please don't do that.
Wait a minute.
Okay.
Wait a minute.
All right.
This is what I want to do.
All right. Go ahead.
Okay. And then I'm going to shove it through the hole, and it's going to be a U-shaped.
Right.
And then on the outside, I'm just going to clip it off. Why can't I do that?
Well, there's a couple of reasons why you don't want to do that. The first and most important one is if that nail in any way, shape, or form damaged something on that inner liner somewhere else. And we've both seen cases where that can occur.
Mm-hmm.
It looks pretty straightforward. But the reason for taking the tire off the wheel is to examine the inside and make sure there's no other damage. If you run the tire low enough while you have this nail in your tire, then you run the risk of permanently damaging the inner liner or some other part of the working structure of the tire. So you don't want to do that. You always want to have the tire removed from the wheel and examined on the inside to make sure there's no other damage. And that kind of lets out any kind of repair that you would just do from the outside.
Okay.
There's nothing wrong with that kind of repair as a temporary repair to get you to somewhere.
Okay.
You know, if you're out in the boonies and you need to get somewhere, that's a great kind of fix to get to the gas station.
Okay.
The next kind of repair is just a rubber plug.
Wait a minute. I'm going to stick on the regular old-fashioned plug from the 50s and 60s that my dad and everybody did.
Well, again, in those days, we were talking about bias tires and bias belted tires. They don't have steel cord in them.
Okay.
That kind of repair works pretty well on a bias tire.
Well, what percentage of the market do they make up, Mr. Big Shot, Mr. Tire?
Probably a couple of percent. Almost everything out there today is a steel-belted
tire. I haven't seen a bias ply tire in 100 years. Right.
Well, you see them in trailers.
Yeah.
Motorcycles, things like that. Okay. So the next kind of repair that you'd want to do if you remove the tire from the wheel is a patch.
Okay.
You just put a patch, you know, you buff the inner liner, you apply this patch, and that seals the air chamber of the tire.
But it allows water to get in on the other end of the hole and rust that screen door you put in there.
That's exactly right. If you live in a wet climate or you live in places that you run the risk of getting moisture down inside that hole, and those steel cords are high tensile cords, and they rust very, very easily.
Okay.
And so what can happen is you can literally rust away the steel section inside that tire there, and that'll lead to a tread separation.
And a tread separation is an egg on the tread. It's a hump. It's an unusual bump. It looks like a snake that swallowed an egg on the tread portion of the tire. There's a vibration associated with it.
Yeah.
And it there's a physical bump that you can see on the tread portion of the
sometimes.
Tire. Okay.
All right. Generally what you get is a looseness of the tread.
Okay.
And what that will result in as you keep driving it is it will result in a worn section. So it'll actually look like a depression when the tire's sitting there.
Okay.
Now, if you've run over something and broken the tire inside, you'll get a bulge.
Okay.
But most of the time, tread separation shows up as kind of a dish or a worn spot where the tread is shallower.
But that's because I thought the tread protrudes past the outer ring of the tire, and so that's why it shows an accelerated wear.
No. It's because as you roll, that tread is able to slip. It moves back and forth as it goes through the contact patch because it's loose between the two steel belts.
So if I patch it, I still have the water issue.
Right. So what the tire industry recommends is a patch and a plug.
Okay.
And it's a patch on the inside with a rubber plug going through the hole and sealing it.
Okay.
And that is the absolute best kind of patch you can possibly get.
Okay, Mr. Big Shot. Now, we got these layers of tires, and you're going to seal the top and the bottom.
1 minute.
Right?
Right.
You're going to seal the inside for the patch and the top with a plug.
Right.
But air expands when the air gets hot, and we have air that it may be stuck in there, so when the tire gets hot, it expands and pulls the tire apart.
No, that's not going to happen. This plug is a rubber plug, and it goes all the way through from the patch to the surface.
Okay.
So there's really no air. If you properly prepare the hole, there's no air trapped, no air left in that in that hole. It's vulcanized into the rubber products and around the steel cords.
Okay. Now, they've got those that actually apply from the inside, right?
Yes. They make what they call a combination patch, which is a patch with a plug built into it, and the repairman basically puts his instrument through the tire and pulls that plug into place and seals the patch.
It's like an umbrella.
It's like little umbrella.
It looks like just like a little
umbrella. Call them mushroom plugs.
Okay, yeah. We'll be back right after this.
Well, you can get stereo tape and a color TV, get a backseat bar and reclining seats, and just pay once a month like you do your rent. Well, I figured it up, and over a period of time, this $4,000 car of mine cost $14,000.99.
Yes, sir. Well, it must be a Ford. You know what? You just take a chance. Every once in a while, you get into trouble all by yourself. Mark Salem here with John Dawes. John is a tire expert on the manufacturing, the creation, the testing, and he's like that guy that does autopsies on TV, except he does them on tires.
Yeah, for tires.
And and then when he asks me to help him, inevitably it's, can you go down to Interstate 10 at mile marker 215 and walk for 2 miles and pick up tires that look like this? That's always a lot of fun. All right, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. They're located in Mesa. Now, on Main Street and Stapley, just east on the south side of the road. Main Street and Stapley, just east of Stapley on the south side of the road. Thompson's been in business since 1970. Brian and Thelma are the owners of Thompson's Auto Repair, and there's no finer people than Brian and Thelma. They are absolutely the kindest, the most gentlest, and the most honest people you've ever seen. They're a AAA approved shop. They're an ASC Blue Seal shop. Brian is part of the TechNet Council for CarQuest, and he was named Business of the Year in 2009 by the Mesa Chamber of Commerce. I'm really proud to have Thompson's Auto Repair at Main and Stapley on my best car repair shop list. You can find it at marksalem.com. Okay, so now I've got the tire all fixed up. And I've got this fancy dancy patch, but I'm going to tell you, and you know this already, all my years of fixing tires, I never liked plugs for this reason. Inevitably, you took the tire apart for the next repair. Now, you'd had two holes inside the tire. You'd have the one that the nail made, but they couldn't possibly follow that. And so you have another one that the plug's sticking out of a quarter of an inch away. You got two holes, and they're lucked out because somehow or another, but they never go the path of the nail. You can't because you can't see it. No. That's what it was that drove me away from plugs was just they weren't scientific enough.
And I've seen cases where that hole that's left over, the one the nail made, is the one that actually bleeds air into the tire and causes a bulge and causes the tire to fail. So the real danger, I mean, there's a number of dangers of a plug-only repair from the outside. is okay. that you don't find the hole.
Okay. And I'm going to say, I'm not shy about, I won't even ride in a car if I know it's got a plug. I mean, and I've never plugged tires in my life. We are using the new umbrella where we pull them through and stuff. But they are so dangerous and so unsophisticated. They're from the 50s, the 40s and the 50s and the 60s. And that technology is so old-fashioned.
Well, they're for tires from that era.
Okay.
Okay.
Fair enough.
If you have a bias tire, you know, and you like on your trailer, and you want to make a patch to get you somewhere, it's a good temporary fix. But okay. That's about all it is. Okay.
So from the top of the tread, we've got this one line coming down. The hole comes in about halfway through the tire. Then it splits to the left and to the right. Okay.
Right.
And what you're talking about from a visual point of view is the tire's made up of many layers. The hole that wasn't plugged in the inside of the tire will feed air into those layers and begin to separate those layers with air.
Well,
and
exactly.
As the air gets hot.
It'll begin to try to pull the tire apart or squeeze the tire apart.
Okay.
Very, very dangerous situation.
Now, when does a tire blow up temperature-wise? How hot does the tire have to be before you're in trouble? In a passenger car light truck application.
Well, the temperature of the tire basically is limited by a lot of different things.
The glue.
Airflow and stuff like
okay.
that. There is no glue in
okay.
a tire.
All
okay.
Right.
Those pieces of rubber, those layers, are vulcanized together where the chemistry is basically knit those layers. There
okay.
is no glue.
Okay.
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 So that's the most important thing. But what happens is that as you start to get hotter and hotter in a tire, it starts shedding pieces of rubber. So you'll see chunks of tread come out and things like that. The most extreme kind of temperature thing I can share with you is what happens during a flat. You get a flat tire and you start running down the road with it, and let's say it's on the rear and you don't notice you have a flat. What'll happen is it'll get so hot that those polyester cords that are in the sidewall mm-hmm. will actually melt.
Okay.
And when that melts, the tread in a single ring will actually pop off the tire. So when you see when you're driving down the road, not an alligator, but
okay.
a ring. You
okay.
see a complete ring sitting there.
Okay.
That's what happened.
Okay.
And all you have left is the sidewalls on the rim.
Okay. All right. Okay. Now, but I have a Harbor Freight temperature gun. And I want to know when we come back what I always gun the shoulder of the tire where the tread meets the sidewall.
Right.
I have in my mind what the number is, I think. but I can tell you, I don't know. I don't check inflation anymore.
Okay.
I don't.
All right.
You know who does my tires?
Who?
My wife.
Uh-oh.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, that's good.
My wife gets out when we're hauling horses or
mm-hmm.
tractors.
Right.
She gets out with her temperature gun that has a little laser button on it.
Right.
And she hits every tire at 6 to 8 inches away,
mm-hmm.
right on the crown, right on the corner. And we're looking for continuity.
Sure. You're looking for a temperature that you know corresponds to proper operation of the tire.
Right.
Right.
And so we don't do the air gauge anymore, and she doesn't have to have her fingernails done that often. When we come back, we're going to continue to talk about cars. I'm Mark Sabin. We'll see you there. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and our tire expert this hour is John Dawes. John has made tires, designed tires, and then he's damaged them to test them. I'm sure you've damaged your fair share.
Oh, yes, I have.
Who's damaged more, you or your wife?
Oh, me, for sure.
See, my wife would do this right now. She'd say, that's out of bounds. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto Repair, 38th Avenue and Indian School. Now, picture 38th Avenue and Indian School. I want you to draw a square with me. We're going to go up to Camelback south to the I-10, the I-17 on the east to the 101 on the west. That's Larry Harker's area. He handles that area like nobody else. He's a family-owned operation. Him and his wife, Ellen, work there. Larry Harker's Auto Repair is a trusted name for quality, affordable automotive service, maintenance. So if you live anywhere between Camelback I-10, the I-17 to the east, the 101 to the west, then I think if you don't have a good auto repair shop already, please look at Larry Harker's Auto at 38th Avenue and Indian School. Okay, what we were talking about temperature.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, let me tell you how come this is we're learning. We go down to Tucson the other day with a bunch of horses. We're heading towards the New Mexico, and Renee goes, and this is 5 o'clock in the afternoon. She says, all the right side tires are hotter than the left side tires. Why?
Were you stopped and sitting in the sun?
No.
No.
But we had traveled in the sun from Phoenix to Tucson, and the sun was on our right.
Yeah, there you go. Mm-hmm.
And so it took us a few minutes to figure that out. So, okay, we're okay with that. We're okay with that. Now, I like it because if I'm driving and the front two tires on the horse trailer are 30 degrees hotter than the back two tires, I need to move a couple of them fat horses backwards.
Yep.
I need to get them off that front axle.
Yep.
And I'll tell you something else. Every tire that I've ever seen blow on a horse trailer, and cowboys never check their tires, okay? We just carry spares. There's no reason to have a gauge. They've all blown up because of heat, because when you get out to take it off, you can't touch the tire. You can't. It's like a red piece of iron burning there. And so I think the answer is that if you get close to 200, 190 to 200 on the shoulder, you're in big trouble, and I'll tell you why. Because I've seen the motorhome tires, the tractor tires, I've seen the trailer tires hauling a backhoe. I've seen most of those steel-belted radials. Sometimes they'll get up to 150, 160. And that's on a hot day, but I'm scared of 200. Do I need to be scared of 200?
Yeah, you do.
Okay.
And the reason is the melting point of polyester is not much more than 200. It's 220 or 230 degrees.
Okay.
Okay, so you start getting to the range where the tire starts to expand pretty dramatically.
Okay.
But the a normal operating temperature of 140 or 150 degrees on a radial is pretty normal.
It's just right in their sweet spot, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that's what I told Renee. I'm only interested in wide discrepancies. Okay, so if you go to the back dually of my dually truck, and three of the four rear tires are 110, and one of them is 160. That tells me clearly I've got an inflation problem, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
And then at that point, I can deal with it.
Yes,
because... But the temperature gun is the key.
Well, that's a quick way of seeing whether something's different or not.
Yeah.
But I would submit to you that you really need to have some experience about what your tires are going to operate at when they're properly inflated and properly loaded.
You're right. You're right. The trailer runs 30 degrees cooler with empty.
Yeah, but okay. you can't... look at the temperature and say, take your brand new temperature gun out and go shoot the tire and say, that's too hot. You have to have some experience about what pressure, what pressure do you have, what load do you have, things like that, so that you get so you know what that tire runs, because tire brands run different temperatures.
Okay.
You change the tire brand, you're going to get a different kind of temperature.
But I'm only looking for a one that's outside the circle.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Absolutely.
And now, should I run my trailer tires... If they're 80-pound tires, should I run them at 60, which is what the trailer said, or should I run them at 80 for the tire? And it's the same way with my mother's car, my dad's car, all the cars that I deal with. What should I run them at? Should I run them at what the door sticker says? Should I run them at the tire says? What does your wife run her tires at?
Well, I set the pressure in my wife's car.
Okay.
Okay, but I set it at the door placard.
Okay.
Whatever the placard says, if you're running the standard size tire for the vehicle, that's the pressure you should run, because that's the one the vehicle manufacturer said is optimum for ride and handling, cornering, all that kind of stuff.
Load.
Everything.
Okay.
They always have some built-in margin. So you're not running the minimum pressure you can have.
Okay, but a Suburban might call for 38 in the back tires, and it can haul 1 to 8 people. So that 38 is good from 1 to 8 people?
Yes, it is.
But the tire shows a 45 max. If I go to 45 max with 8 people in it, am I going to hurt myself?
No, you're not going to hurt yourself. You're just going to wear the tire out really fast in the center.
Okay, but I'm only going to go down to Karchner Cavern with a whole bunch of people, and I don't want to change the tire, and I want the best fuel economy. Why can't I go to the maximum inflation?
Well, you certainly can, but you risk, you're going to wear the tire faster, and you're going to change the handling of the vehicle. It's not going to handle the way...
It's not going to ride,
It's not going to ride right,
okay.
And the handling of it's going to be different.
Okay, but I'm willing to sacrifice that, because are you talking 10% loss in tread by overinflating the tire and wearing the center out?
Well, I think that depends on the tire, but you can dramatically change the amount of life you'll get out of that tire.
All right. Because, see, I like the idea, number one, a fully inflated tire is going to run cooler, yes or no?
Yes.
Okay. In Arizona, I like that. You may not like that, but I like that. Number two, and a fully inflated tire is got a slightly smaller risk associated with punctures of curb hits and stuff on the road.
Wrong.
It's fully inflated. It's
fully
harder.
Inflated, so it's harder.
Okay.
And because it's harder, it doesn't give in the tire business, we call that enveloping power, or the ability of the tire to wrap itself around something on the road and not be damaged by it.
Okay.
So if you inflate the tire beyond the pressure recommended for the vehicle, the tire's then very hard. And so things that would normally be wrapped around by the tire now damage it.
Okay. So what about kissing curbs downtown Phoenix?
Well, again, the harder the tire is, the more likely you are to peel that sidewall rubber off.
But a lot of the curb hits are where the rim cuts the sidewall, and if I inflate it higher, don't I avoid the cutting of the sidewall?
Well, that would help, yeah.
Okay, okay. I knew I'd get a yes out of you sooner or later.
You sound like a lawyer.
I know. I thought I had it all handled. Okay, nitrogen. I know you want to talk about nitrogen. Let me just tell you what I think. I see ads for nitrogen that says that you're going to spend $10,000 for this machine, but if you charge everybody X amount of dollars, you can sell 30 of these a day, and the ROI, the return on investment of this machine, is 2 months max. Then at that point, 100% of the profits go into your pocket. This machine doesn't make anything more than 95% raw nitrogen. And in my hand, let me round off the number, it's 80, 79 or 80. So then we can't suck all the nitrogen out of the tire. We can't flatten the tire like a pancake. So and I have a nitrogen tester, and I've been testing everything with a green plug, and I've never seen anything that's outside the realm of about 85 to 88. That's all. Now, I say nitrogen is a ripoff. I say that the moisture inside the tire is a BS reason to do it. Nobody out there drives NASCAR 200 miles an hour, and nobody's car weighs 25 million tons like an airplane and lands with, 400 people on it. Except some of the cowboys.
All right, let me take a couple of these points. First, the cost. I agree with you. The cost is way out of bounds. These machines, if you had a 3 or 4 year payback, nitrogen should be something that's, a couple of bucks for four tires, five or $10 or nothing. It ought to be free.
There's a lot of dealers that do it for free, and I applaud them.
Absolutely. Okay. As far as maintaining your inflation pressure, that's the big one that they usually push as a sales.
You don't need to check it because it leaks less.
Right. And in fact, the math says it leaks about 30% less.
Okay.
But a tire will basically leak 1 to 3% per month. So if you take that 2% kind of in the middle on a 30 PSI tire, what's that, 0.6 PSI in a month?
That's a half a pound.
And 30% of that is 0.16 PSI.
Okay.
You're never going to see the difference between 0.48 and 0.6. Nobody will ever notice it.
In a year's period of time,
nobody's going to notice it.
Are you sure of those numbers?
I'm positive.
All right.
Those numbers. Okay.
Just kidding.
And then, but where nitrogen really has a benefit is reducing the amount of oxygen that goes into your tire. And oxygen is the thing that degrades the rubber products in the tire, that aging issue we keep hearing about.
Okay.
And the hotter the climate where you live, the faster that process occurs. Okay. That being said, if you wear your tires out in 5 years or less, nitrogen really isn't doing anything for
you. Who doesn't?
Well, lots of people don't.
Okay.
Lots of people don't.
Mrs. Jones from Ahwatukee and some Sun City people, they probably don't. But really,
but
if you buy
an 80,000-mile tire
and
you drive 10,000 miles a year, that tire is very likely to last you 8 years.
Now, raise your right hand and tell me that an 80,000-pound tire is truly going to give me 80,000 miles.
It does for some people. Me, I've got a little bit of a lead foot, and that doesn't work so well for me.
I've never seen.
If you rotate your tires and you maintain your air pressure, if your tires last longer, take your spare tire.
Okay.
Take the spare tire you lug around, came new in your truck.
Right.
And you it's now 10 years old or whatever. That tire should have been inflated with nitrogen.
Okay,
because you if you take that tire that's 10 or 15 years old and you put it on the ground and try to drive long distances with it, the aging issue becomes really critical.
But your industry is telling us to throw tires away after 5 years because they have a born-on date with them, and now we're going to expire them like old donuts.
Wait a minute. Not the tire industry, okay? I don't necessarily consider the tire industry my industry.
Okay.
But we got two camps in here. We got the vehicle manufacturers who are concerned about liability and so on. And their issue is if it's over 6 years old, get rid of it.
Okay.
The tire industry, who has to deal with trying to supply tires and deal with a supply chain and so on, is saying 10 years.
Okay.
All right.
But let's talk about RVs.
5 years. Where the tire is just sitting there.
Yeah. Does it age in my driveway?
Yes, it does.
Okay, does it age in my garage?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
aging begins when the tire's inflated.
Okay.
And it continues no matter what happens to it until it's deflated.
Okay.
Okay, so aging is a function of the oxygen being pushed into the tire from the high-pressure area inside.
Okay.
Okay, now, that being said, you still have ozone attack from the outside. So if it's in your garage, you don't have the ozone attacking the outside of the tire.
Okay. Okay.
Or if you have covers on your tires, you don't have the ozone attacking the outside. But the aging of the inside and the rubber around the steel belts, which is really the critical area of the tire, goes on as long as the tire's inflated.
Do you love your wife?
I do.
Okay. So if your wife has tires that are 5-6 years old and still have a third of the tread left on them, are you going to pull them?
Yeah.
Did my son talk to you?
No.
I took my motorhome on a trip not so long ago. I went to Texas looking at some horses. And he says, Dad, he says, those tires on the back end are 8 years old. I said, son, I don't care. They're Michelins. I use Michelins. I don't care. Just outside El Paso, boom!
Yeah. Well, I have tires that are on my truck that are now 7 years old. Okay. And
you're going to keep them.
I'm thinking very seriously. I've always had nitrogen in them.
Okay.
I'm very seriously considering getting rid of them, even though they probably still have half the tread.
I am convinced this whole thing is driven by the tire manufacturers who want to sell more tires. Because do the people in Minnesota, North Dakota, and then on the north have the same problems with tires aging as we do in Arizona?
Absolutely not.
How are we going to draw those lines? I'm not asking you to defend that industry.
Tire industry, you know, tire aging really is a southern United States kind of phenomenon.
I-10 corridor.
Well, I divide the United States kind of into three pieces.
Okay.
If you're south of I-40,
okay,
aging is an issue.
Okay.
If you're between I-40 and I-80 in the United States, you know, your tires last a long, long time. You're one of those people that has them last a long time. Okay. You might consider it. And if you're above I-40, it probably doesn't do anything for you.
I-80. If you're above
I-80.
I-80.
Okay. Yes,
right.
I-80.
I get that. Yeah. I get that. All right. Well, we didn't cover everything I wanted to cover, but we got to argue a lot.
Yeah.
But I'm not taking, you know, my wife said, you should have done what Alan said. Well, when I get home, there's four brand new Michelins sitting there. And I said, go ahead and mount them and balance them. I don't care. And we put the spare on, and I had a good spare. But nitrogen for the money doesn't work for me. I'm not going to air up my spare, and I'm not going to take them off at 5,000 miles until I'm older and I need a AAA card.
Five years, right? Not 5,000 miles.
Yeah, 5 years. And I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And I'm watching my tires carefully, and really and truly, in my entire life, the only blowouts I've ever had is a G159 four or five times a Goodyear. I will not put a Goodyear tire on a motorhome. I don't care who says otherwise. I will send you out the door if you want a Goodyear tire. I am done with them. But that's the only tire has ever blown on me except this Michelin, and they've all been motorhome related. Mm-hmm. All of them. Yeah. I've never had one on my red truck or any of the rest of them. No, my wife can't say that. But anyway, thank you, John Dawes. For the rest of you, we're going to talk about cars this next hour, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. If you got a car question, now's the time, 608-602-508-0960.
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled up to my Chevrolet, I climbed down up inside. The choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart. Although I was a bit concerned.
Well, good morning, everybody. Stick second hour of our show. So 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. And the first hour we talked about tires and we had a whole lot of fun. And we got to argue some. And I'm not quite sure that John actually changed my mind, but I really respect him a lot. And I may listen to some of the things he said, but, you know, my dad's yelling at me in my ear right now, and my brothers and everybody else is saying, oh, no, no. Well, that's the way we used to do it in the 50s, 60s, 70s, and that was then and this is now. But if you have a car question, anything on a car, I'm going to help you. 602-508-0960, 508-0960. The lines are wide open. You can call right now, and you're going to get in pretty doggone quick. Because when you come in, we've got a horn honk, and then we're going to honk the horn. That lets me know somebody's on the line. So if you want to do that, again, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto. Kurtz works on everything: domestic, import, gas, diesel, motorhomes, small cars, big cars, small trucks, big trucks, anything. I-17 and Bell, just east. Since they've been open in 1992, they opened in 1992, they've been a member in good standing with the Better Business Bureau. He's been a member of my best car repair shops list, and he's done a great job. Now, folks, I get lots of accolades from these guys, and I pass them on to them. Every once in a while, perhaps maybe once a month, out of all 60 shops on my list, I'll get a concerned customer who wants intervention from me. From that point, the shop owner takes over. And then the shop owner from there goes through the Better Business process and then to an arbitration. If at the arbitration the shop owner is told to either make a refund or fix the car and the shop owner refuses, two things will happen immediately. Number one, I'm kicking the shop owner off. And number two, I will fix your car up to $5,000, or I will make the refund up to $5,000. And that's written with my name signed to it on our website, marksalem.com. I trust these guys. I believe in them. And here's the beauty of it. Our list has been available to the public since 1988. I've never had to pull money out of my pocket. And why? It's because they're good guys. And they understand sometimes you got to write a check. So that's what it's all about. Kurtz Auto Repair is one of the best. I don't remember the last time I had anybody say anything bad about Kurtz. In fact, 2, 3, 4 times a year, I get a nice letter from customers at Kurtz Auto.
Chris from Phoenix is
first.
All righty.
Chris, good morning to you. We'll take you first. How can I help you?
Well, my question had to do with my 2003 Ford Expedition.
Okay.
And maybe about a year and a half ago, I started noticing that the windows, you know, I push the button, the master thing on the driver's side, and
yep.
Control. And at one point, I thought they just don't work anymore because they were down and I couldn't get them up. I did have them repaired, but then they started working it. But you have to mash it a certain way to get them up. And what's up with that?
I'm going to guess here, but I'm pretty sure your master switch is the problem.
Is the problem? Okay.
And here's what you have to do. Do you want to save yourself $100?
Yeah, sure do.
Okay. When that right rear window doesn't roll up or down, yeah. I want you to get out of the car, leave the key where it's at, leave it running, walk over there and see if it works with that switch.
Oh, okay. 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 All right.
And that will tell us everything we need to know.
Okay.
Now, if it doesn't work with that switch, then it's probably going to be a motor, or it could still be the master switch. But if it does work with that switch, it eliminates the regulator, it eliminates the motor. And those are two big dogs.
Two big dogs, okay.
So that's what we need you to do. We need you to take the next step, because if you walk into a shop and you say, every time one of the other three windows doesn't work, it will work from its switch, but not from the master switch. I'm going to tell you, I'm going to spend about $50 of your money taking that master switch apart. I'm going to find the terminals are all burned up on it. I'm going to replace it, and we're done.
Yeah.
Because you've saved yourself a significant amount of money by giving us the information we need.
Okay.
But I'm betting the master switch is bad, and especially, and you did a great job because you said something that was so important to me. If you mash and manipulate and roughhouse the switch, it will work. It's got to be the switch.
Got to be.
So, you know what? You got two choices. You can go to the dealer, which is the only place you're going to get the switch. Or you could go to a wrecking yard and find a low mileage. And then the wrecking yard is going to tell you, hey, Chris, that switch belongs on 6 different years of Expeditions. It's the same part number for 6 years. And we have an 08 here with 10,000 miles on it.
Uh-oh.
Now, they're not stupid. They're going to be half the cost of a new switch.
Okay.
But that's a good deal.
Okay.
So,
okay.
Try that. Okay.
Cool. Thank you. Is there a place in Phoenix? You mentioned Mesa this morning. You mentioned somewhere in like I-17.
Yeah.
Is there a place in around the Paradise Valley, kind of the 32nd and Street, kind of cactus?
Yep. There's a couple of them. There's Kelly Clark up on 40th and Bell, 40th Street and Bell.
Okay.
And then we have, you're going to have to move kind of south, but he's got that north area really tied up for us good. Now, if you go towards Scottsdale, we got Air Park Auto over on Hayden and Raintree. Those are mechanical shops.
Yeah.
If you live in the corridor, in the central corridor, and you're not all the way into Scottsdale, then 40th Street and Bell, 41st Street and Bell is Kelly Clark, and I promise you he'll do a good job for you.
Cool.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you much, sir.
All righty.
Tom from Goodyear is next.
Tom, good morning to you, buddy. How can I help you?
Morning, morning. I missed the tire guy, but I do have a tire question.
Okay.
On an auto tow dolly behind the RV. First off, are those different tires than regular automobile tires they put on them?
It actually depends on what the sidewall says. If it's a P-series tire where it has like a P195-7514, P is passenger car.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll have my mind just went blank. But they'll have a trailer designation. And sometimes it'll say SL, I think it's SL, ST, standard trailer. That's what it says. You need to make sure, let me do some math here for you. You got the tow dolly, right?
Yes.
Okay, you're going to look at both tires, and on the side of the tire in very small letters, it's going to say, put this inflation at this for this maximum load. Now, if the left side tire says 3,000 pounds and the right side tire says 3,000 pounds, then that tells me it's a 6,000-pound axle, and it can hold 6,000 pounds. Now, I'm going to go to the door of the vehicle that you're going to carry in the dolly. What is that?
Let's see. I don't have it in front of me. I imagine it's going to be about 3,500.
Okay. Well, I'm not interested in the total weight. I'm going to look at the door sticker of the Honda or the Toyota or whatever you're hauling in the dolly, and I'm going to look at the front gross axle weight.
The front, okay.
And if the front gross axle weight is 4,000 and you got 2,000-3,000-pound tires, are you okay or not?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. See? Numbers.
Here's what's bad. You got two tires, one of them's 18 and one of them, the other, they're 18, so you got 3,600 pounds of capability. You got 3,600 pounds of tires underneath the front of the vehicle you're hauling, but the front of the vehicle weighs 4,000. That's the recipe for disaster. You're going to have tire problems. So if you have any questions, you can give me the specifics. I need the front axle weight, the gross front axle weight, and it'll say GFWR. No, GFAR, gross front axle weight rating or something like that. I need that, and I need the maximum load on both fronts, and I'll help you with that, and we'll do that mark at marksalem.com.
All right, I have one more question,
okay.
If I may.
Sure.
All right. The tow dolly, and I went back through and found the owner's manual where they assemble it.
Uh-huh.
They said when it's empty, run 10 pounds in the tire. I've been wondering what you thought of that.
Well,
by weight.
Yeah. The reason why they want you to do that is because I don't know if you've ever followed a motorhome with an empty dolly, but that dolly's hopping around sometimes 6, 8, 10 inches off the ground.
Okay.
And they want you to soften up the tires to keep the dolly on the road, and they don't want it hopping up in the air and flipping around and doing all the stuff it's going to do with the tires at maximum inflation.
Okay.
So that's really kind of the reason. I don't know what to tell you. I think that you're going to have a car in the dolly about 80% of the time, and the other 20% of the time the motorhome's going to be parked, the dolly's with it, and you're actually driving the vehicle that you put in the dolly. So, but when you drive it empty, yeah, I don't know if I'd go 10 pounds, but I'd drop it certainly in half to soften the tire up to keep the dolly on the ground. Okay?
Sounds right. Good.
Thank you very much. 602-508-0960, and I want to warn you right now about something that's come across my desk in a very big way over the last, 2 or 3 weeks. Folks, the economy still sucks. It's terrible. And our industry is like no other industry, or is like other industries, that when business gets tough or gets slow, we either better have Plan B and some extra money, or we better have a credit line. And if we don't, we have to increase sales any way we can. Example number one. A guy takes his car in because it threw the fan belt, and they tell him that his water pump locked up and caused the fan belt to come off. He had him replace the water pump, and they sold him a lot of other stuff. And he asked for the old water pump back. He called me, and I said, take it to a couple of other experienced mechanics, technicians, and ask them first, is this water pump off my truck? And they can look at it and answer that. And number two, tell me what's wrong with this water pump. And he did. And he calls me back and he says, that water pump is, yes, it's from my truck. And neither one of them, both of them said, there's nothing wrong with this water pump. It doesn't have any bad bearings and it's not been leaking. folks, whoever put that water pump on is in big trouble, because this customer is like a wildcat. He's going to go to the Attorney General's Fraud Division, and he's got the evidence. And there's no talking around that. Somebody sold him something he didn't eat. Example number two. A friend of mine calls me and he says, I got my truck in a shop for an oil change. And he says, they say I need front brakes, I need oil pan gasket, I need a transmission gasket, I need a serpentine belt, and I need rear brakes, or front brakes. And I said, okay, so what are you all wrapped up for? And he goes, I just did front brakes. I said, tell him. He said, well, why are they saying I need front brakes? And I said, you're asking the wrong person. I wasn't there. But ask him. So when we come back, I'm going to tell you what he found out. And then I'm going to tell you another story about how somebody went in and had some work done on a car, and it ended up costing them thousands of dollars, and at the end of the day, it was never what they said. So this is what's going on in our industry. It's an ugly, ugly situation. And right now, it's as worst as I've seen it in the last 20 years. So you have to prepare yourself for the inevitable upsell. We'll be right back.
Mike DiTeria.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We've got open lines available except for Ben. Ben's holding one of them down, and we're going to get to him in just a minute. But if you'd like to join us and have a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. And that's the easiest way to get a hold of us. When it comes to paint and body, did you know that the frame or the unibody structure and the integrity of your vehicle is important to your car as the foundation is to your home or your spine is to your body? Phoenix Body Works uses the finest frame and unibody measuring equipment in the automobile industry. It's important information when you're getting your car repaired after an accident. I've seen a lot of vehicles come into our shop with bent frames, and obviously they weren't correctly repaired, and usually we can find that out when we do an alignment. But Phoenix Body Works has this machine like a big chiropractic bench, and it has specific spots for your car only. And every single one of those spots, sometimes as many as 20, had better be in exactly the same spot. So if we can get the frame exactly right, then everything that sits on the frame, the doors, the glass, the roof, the fenders, the hood, the trunk, it'll all fit perfectly. So Phoenix Body Works holds down the north area town for me. They've got Anthem, they've got New River, and they've got North Phoenix. 19th Avenue, a block north of Deer Valley Road, been around a long time. Greg May is a swell guy. So if you need paint or body work, or if your car's been involved in an accident, regardless of who's paying for it, you or the other insurance company, and you live up in that area or anywhere close, I strongly suggest you use Phoenix Body Works. All right, Ben, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hello.
Yes.
I just killed the radio. Can you hear me okay?
Yep. Thank you for doing that.
Good. You advertised a transmission shop, a Vietnam vet diagnostician extraordinaire.
Yep.
I'm looking at buying a Nissan Sentra without a transmission, and I'm wondering if I could get his name, and maybe you could give me a ballpark idea off the top of your head of how much it would cost to put in a rebuilt transmission in a 2003 Sentra.
Let's talk about that for just a minute. What you're talking about in our vernacular is a basket case. Here's your problem. If the transmission's out of it, that means all the bolts are gone, all the brackets are gone, all the lines are gone, all the linkage is gone. The transmission, to get a transmission and put it in there, is a piece of cake. But without the transmission, do you have the two front axles?
Well, everything is there. It just doesn't work. And the man who's selling it is going to sell it rather cheap, so I'm trying to see if the price,
okay,
which is under $1,000 plus fixing it, is worth it for a 2003 Sentra with only,
okay,
about 100,000 miles on it.
Okay, all right. If everything's there, then forget what I said. I can't give you an estimate. The guy you're talking about is Bob Jones from Quality Transmission in Tempe. Quality Transmission in Tempe, Bob Jones. He may be open till noon today, so you can still call him. You're going to say to him, a rebuilt transmission for this Sentra, your Sentra, and how much do I write my check for? That's always what you ask for. Always ask, what am I going to write my check for? Now, how much does he want for the car?
I think it's $900.
Okay. If the engine starts and runs, and it sounds good and doesn't miss, and it idles good, that's a bonus. If the air conditioning works, that's a second bonus. If the air conditioning hasn't been recently filled and it's been working for some time, whew, that's a good deal. Forget the tires and the brakes. All that kind of stuff is disposable, and you can get good deals on the Sentra. It's my opinion that a good running car in Arizona with no air is worth about $1,000. If the air works, it's worth $1,500. So I think is this going to be for you or one of your kids or what?
Basically me for transportation.
And it's going to get great gas mileage, and it's going to be kind of like a Bic lighter car. If you bought this for $900, if you bought it, and you probably should at least ask him if he'll take less, and you spend another $2,300, I'm just throwing that number out there, then let's say you got $3,000 in the car. By the time you get done, that car's worth $200 a month. So the real question is if it's worth $200 a month to drive, the benefit of driving it, because you can't rent a car for $200 a week. So $200 a month, that's 15 months. So the question to you is every month after 15 months is the same as putting $200 in your pocket. So at the end of 15 months, you're home free. If that car gives you another 2 or 3 years, it's like having a free car. So think of it in that way. It's kind of like a Bic lighter kind of respect, where someday it'll blow up, someday it'll just stop running, someday you'll overheat it and just toast the motor. You leave the title on the dashboard, the keys on top of it, and walk away from it. And you know you got a good deal because that car lasted you for a long time. So look at it from that point of view, and I think that'll be a good economical way to look at it. But thanks for calling.
Yep, thank you.
Uh-huh.
Tony is next.
Tony, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Hey, question somewhat, you know, or kind of clarify about, you know, the tires. You know, I was thinking about calling in earlier when John was there, but
okay.
That and the nitrogen, I agree with you for the most part, you know, as far as, you know, practical everyday use, okay?
Yeah.
But I want to get to the real question first, okay?
Okay?
After hearing you talk about, you know, when you're hauling your hay burners down there to Texas, okay, or whatever,
yeah,
and then you ended up going to getting some guns or something like that,
uh-huh,
okay? Why do you want to buy a Winchester when you can buy a real gun, like a Marlin lever action?
Are you kidding me? You're going to
do
me
asking. I mean, a Winchester looks good up on the wall, you know, hanging there. But if you want a real workhorse, you buy a Marlin 4570 guide gun.
Tony,
okay? I mean, I'm going to get back to the tires after that.
You're right. I'll answer you. I'll answer you. It's easy. This is not a gun that anybody's going to shoot. I've got grandsons, and I'm buying old Winchesters to pass on to my grandsons because, for instance, I just bought one that was built in 1954, which is the year I was born. So when I hand that to my son, he'll always know that his dad is as old as that gun. Now, I bought all my grandsons' years of, and I got a 1901, 1915, 16, 17. I just bought a 62, a 63, and a 54. But these are not guns I'm hunting with. I'm buying really nice old Winchesters that have a history behind them, that are really clean. They all work, and we detail the heck out of them. But I'm buying these for my grandsons. And I agree with you. I'm going to give you what you asked for. If I was hunting with a gun, it wouldn't be a Winchester. But they're so cowboyish, and they're so old. And I've got that 1901 gun. It's a beautiful gun. And it's already 111 years old.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
I agree.
They
look nice hanging on the wall.
They look nice.
I mean, I used to walk into S&W Guns over here off Cave Creek, and that's all he had on the wall back then when he was in business. Okay.
And you know, in Texas, when I was there, I went into a gun shop, and he must have had 40 of them, and he wouldn't even tell me what year they were, and he wouldn't entertain any offers. So some of us are crazy about that, but for me, it's just kind of collecting like marbles and stuff, just a little bit more money.
Well, thanks for answering that question.
Okay.
Now, back to the tires and nitrogen, okay? Now, you've explained it very, you know,
1 minute.
Succinctly. You know, you can't collapse the tire down to get all the oxygen out and then reinflate it. Now, what if the person is just, you know, whoever it is just hell-bent on having 100% nitrogen in their tire? Is the only way they can do that is they have to have a special wheel. Or should they have a special wheel? Because right now all you have is like, you know, one hole, you know, with a plug that's inlet and outlet. You would also have to have a second hole to where you set it up just like, you know, an AC system where you purge and have an indicator that's like a collector system, you know, that shows that you actually get 100% nitrogen by blowing nitrogen in, you know, flushing it and purging the oxygen out.
Yeah.
Over a long process.
We can do that. We can do that. Here's how we do it. We bought a nitrogen tank. It's got 2,000 PSI. All we do is we bust the top bead on the tire, and then we start injecting air through the valve stem, or nitrogen through the valve stem.
Mm-hmm.
Count to 5 or 6. By the time 5 or 6 comes around, that's nothing but nitrogen in that tire. We forced all the oxygen out. We're purging it. And then we really let her rip, which will pop the top bead, and we finish airing up the tires. And in that particular situation, we've got as high as 98. So,
well,
yeah,
I guess that's close enough.
Yeah, it, you're right. It is possible, but I used a lot of nitrogen on that tire to get that.
Well, I guess cost effectiveness just doesn't work.
It doesn't. But I thought you were going to ask me, and actually I got to take a break. So when we come back, we'll do that. But I'm late, and I'm sorry, but we'll be right to stay there, Tony. We'll be right back.
D&B Auto Repair is a shop that has been on Mark Salem's best car repair shops list from the very beginning. D&B
is not a problem. I will let you finish your sentence. Not a problem.
Has been in the valley providing honest quality work at a fair price since 1992. That means D&B
Auto Repair
has been
servicing
your vehicles and servicing the community for over 20 years. Whether it's a Little League game, around the neighborhood, or Glendale Community College, D&B Auto is pitching in. Conveniently located on the southwest corner of 27th Avenue in Maryland, D&B Auto is also a member of the BBB, ASA, and has ASE certified technicians. So give Dan and Betsy a call at 602-249-2103 to schedule an appointment and find out why their customers won't take their vehicles any other place. You won't be disappointed. They work on both domestic and foreign cars, anything from oil changes to engine jobs. That's D&B Auto at 27th Avenue in Maryland, 602-249-2103, 602-249-2103. Mark Salem has a friend at Thunderbird Automotive, and so do you. His name is Tom Fletcher. If you live in the Northwest area, you have two Thunderbird autos to choose from. One at 88th Avenue and Thunderbird in Peoria, just west of 101, and the other one is at Mountain View and Reams Road in Surprise, just south of Grand. In 2003, Thunderbird Auto was the finalist in the Better Business Bureau Ethics Award, and in 2004, they won that BBB Ethics Award. Thunderbird Auto has an A-plus rating.
Tape and a color TV, get a backseat car and a climate
well,
seat. And
good afternoon, good morning, like folks. Mark was late on that last break. You see, in radio, when they want you to be out at 11:30, they don't want you to be out at 11:30 and 26 seconds or 5 seconds. Or they want you out at the second. And I get all wrapped up in the show, and I don't look at the clock, but I have the best producers in the world, and they cover all my faux pas and a couple of other things I do, so they actually keep me out of trouble as much as I try to keep into it. Tony, with nitrogen, we use a tank, like I said, that has 2,000 PSI in it. One of the things we use that for is because, and I'm going to tell people that are advocates of nitrogen, I agree with you that there's something to do with moisture, and it will reduce the moisture inside. What we use it for is to flush your air conditioning unit after your compressor blows up and sends metal throughout your system. Because water and Freon make an acid. So when we take this big tank and we chuck it up on the airlines, we're blowing out. We're taking the moisture with us. So we use it, plus we can boost up the PSI where we can really blow out your lines and get all the metal out of there, plus the nitrogen will go through and push everything in front of it. So, you know, we do use nitrogen, and I'm not going to argue with anybody. If you're adamant that you want nitrogen, fine. There's plenty of good dealers out there that'll do it for you for free or for real cheap. I'm not saying you shouldn't. I'm just saying there's a big picture associated with it, and as long as you know both sides, you're in good shape, right?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you very much. And Donna, you're up next. Donna, how can I help you today?
Hi, good morning. We just bought my daughter her first car, and it's a 2006 Hyundai Tucson.
Okay.
Got it a couple weeks ago, and just had an engine light come on it.
Okay.
And the trouble code is P0455. Which identified it as an EVAP system large leak detected.
Okay.
Under that, there's about 12 possible causes.
Yep. You don't want to guess on this because you're going to guess it's going to cost you money.
Okay.
What they're saying is this. The computer will monitor the gas tank for pressure, and intermittently the computer will direct this hose and orifice to open up and suck on the gas tank, draw a vacuum on the gas tank. And then there's a sensor on the top of the gas tank that says, "Hey, computer, I see the vacuum. I see 1 inches. I see 2 inches. Okay, it's holding 2 inches." And the computer says, "Hey, keep an eye on that. Just make sure it doesn't go to zero." And the sensor in the tank says, okay. So they go. This goes on for another minute or so. Then all of a sudden, before the computer tells this device to cancel the test, the sensor says, "We just lost vacuum. We just lost vacuum." So that's what happens. When there's so many moving parts in that you don't stand a chance in guessing right. But here's what I want you to do first.
Okay.
I want you to continue to drive the car, and I want you to go out there, and I want you to show your daughter how to put the gas cap on, and I want at least a turn after it starts clicking. Okay? Because putting the gas cap on too lightly is a very big cause of that light. Now, the computer's going to continue to test the integrity of the gas tank. You see, Donna, we want to suck the fumes off the tank and burn them again. So we want that to be in that whole system to have integrity. We don't want to suck air. We want to suck fumes. So the computer's going to continue to do that. Well, the next time the computer goes through this monitoring of the evaporative system, it'll go, "Oh, it passed." And then the next time it'll say, "Oh, it passed." And then it'll turn the light off for you. So if it's a gas filler neck problem, if she didn't tighten up that fuel, and if you go out there and you turn that cap if it's loose enough to where you turn it before it clicks, that's your problem. So start there. The next thing you do is you take the code into a shop and you say how much to check it out, and the shop's going to say $75 to $125, and then you say, "Okay, you're going to give me exactly what it is." Yep, it's going to be the apply solenoid or the dump solenoid, or it's going to be the sensor on top of the tank, or it's going to be this vacuum line over here, or it's going to be this relay, or it's going to be this, and yes, I will tell you exactly what it is. You know how we're going to do that? We're going to put smoke in the tank, and we're going to watch where it leaks. That'll help us a lot. Okay?
All right.
Thank you, Donna.
And thank you.
You bet. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 508-0960. The lines are wide open. If you'd like to join us, you certainly can, and I'll help you with your car questions. And when we come back, I'm going to comment on what we did when our kids were 16 years old and we got them cars. Well, thanks for spending your Saturday with me. We're not done, but thank you very much for spending your Saturday morning with me. I appreciate the calls. And, Bob, we're going to get to you in just a second. But just a minute ago, you heard a spot about quality transmission, and I just want to follow up with something. There isn't a week that doesn't go by that I don't get a call or an email from somebody who's happy with them. And the reason why that is because when you're dealing with transmissions, about a third of the time you're talking about lots of money, well over $1,000 or $2,000. I can't tell you how many people go in, either after being told by a neighbor or, you know, getting on the internet or going to other transmission shops that they need major work, and they find out that, no, it's not major work. That happens a lot. And I think people are really grateful for a bill that might be $200 or $300 or $400 when they were expecting something of $2,000 to $3,000 nature. So Bob and Quality Transmission kind of holds down the East Valley and the east side of Central Avenue for me. I've got some other wonderful transmission shops, Sun Transmissions, Adolph's Transmission, and Automatic Transmission Exchange, but Bob holds the East Valley down really well. Now, there's another guy in town here, too, Action Auto, Tom. If you're a fisherman, you got to go up to Tom and have him do an oil change. It's a family-owned operation. It's Deer Valley, and they've been around since 1983. They can fix anything. They got ASE-certified technicians. They have a TechNec shop, which offers free roadside service, towing, and coast-to-coast 12-month, 12,000-mile warranty. Then there's a rewards program where you accumulate points to receive discounts on future repairs. Action Auto is located just west of I-17 on Deer Valley Road. West of I-17 to Deer Valley Road. So, those of you in Anthem and New River, Maybe Action Auto would be a place that you would look at as well. Okay, Bob, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
On a 4.3 02 Chevy Blazer, my shop is telling me the harmonic balancer needs to be replaced, and I thought that's just a solid pulley. What can go bad?
I'm not going to answer you to tell me why did you take it in there. What symptoms did you have?
Well, it's making a noise. The water pump bearing was bad. It was making a howly, screechy noise, and they were in there changing the water pump, and now they're telling me the harmonic balancer pulley is like walking off the...
Oh, God. let me... I wasn't there, so don't take this to the bank. But the harmonic balancer goes bad. The inner portion of the harmonic balancer is firmly attached to the crankshaft, and it spins all the time. And then after that, we have this rubber band, this thick rubber band that goes around the harmonic balancer. Then we have what we call the shell, and that is pressed over the top of it. What happens is the inside spins and the outside doesn't, which causes a belt squeal. And the noise is related to the harmonic balancer and really isn't to the water pump. You might ask them if they'd hang on to the old water pump for you, just so you could feel it, because you can feel a bad one. And I'm wondering, and I'm not saying your shop is a ripoff. Don't you misunderstand me. I'm giving you some stuff that you can choose to do or not to do. But if they put the water pump on, and then they put the fan belt back on, and they had the same noise, and then they found the harmonic balancer, the question is did it need a water pump at the front side? That's not too late for them to take the pump off and put your old pump back on and recover, you know, and put you back the way they found you. But they could be right, too. But one way or another, you should ask that question. But the harmonic balancer will cause the alternator not to charge. It'll cause the water pump not to spin. It'll cause an overheat. And not too long ago, I won't tell you the dealership, but I got a call from an insurance company that said the motor is out on this particular kind of truck. And I went over there, and it had a heck of a knock. And I talked the technician into just cutting the front belt off. Don't take the time to remove it. I'll pay the belt's $25, $35, $45. I have the authority to pay for that. Just cut the belt off. We cut the belt off, the noise went away. The harmonic balancer was bad, and they wanted to sell him an engine. But I don't think they did that on purpose. I think that the technician just got fooled. I don't think it was intentional in any way, shape, or form. But it wasn't an insurance issue because it had nothing to do with comprehensive coverage. It had to do with just the failure of the harmonic balancer. And, of course, the customer was pretty doggone happy as well. So protect yourself. But when the crankshaft's spinning, obviously everything, the power steering pump, the air conditioning, the water pump, the alternator, the air pump, if you've got one, all that spins in synchronization. When the harmonic balancer comes apart, it makes a noise, and it also puts a load on that front pulley. And as a result of that, many times, the all the accessories will slow down. So you might have had a power steering problem. You might have had an air conditioning, hot, cold, those kinds of symptoms. But just ask for the old pump back. Ask them if you can feel the old pump, because if you take the shaft on the old pump and you spin it and it sounds like gravel's inside there, they were right. And the harmonic balancer was part of the noise. If you spin it, it's nice and smooth like the little wheel on your wristwatch, then you might want to ask them about that. But that's really what ties together what I talked about a few segments ago about our industry. There is a lot of shops, and when I say a lot, let me be clear. There's at least 10 to 15% of the shops out there, in my opinion, are selling stuff that you don't need. Folks, they need the money. They just need the money. If you've made it through this economic crash, then we had a terrible summer in the auto repair industry. Many shops used their credit line up completely, and now when we get into the wintertime and it's slow, then we don't have a credit line. So we have to make bills, and it has to be on your back. You have to be diligent. You have to ask for your old parts back. Don't be shy about pulling into another garage and saying, what do you think of this? Because he may take the water pump and spin it and say, it's bad. Or look here, see this hole right here? Look at all that rusty stuff there. That it was leaking. Whoever took this water pump off did a good job because it was leaking, and that says it is. You go, thank you. Maybe buy him a cup of coffee. Maybe have your oil change done the next time there. But if he says there's nothing wrong with this pump, you got a problem, Houston. Now, the good news is there's plenty of people out there that will help you.
You got 12 on your side, 3 on your back. You got the Attorney General's Fraud Division, but they need you to kind of put the case together for them. You can't just make accusations without something. So this guy with the water pump, he took it to a very honest repair shop, well-respected. Not me. I'm not saying I'm in that class at all, but it wasn't me. I guided him, but it wasn't me. And they looked at it and they wrote down, there's nothing wrong with this pump. This pump did not lock up. This pump did not throw the belt off. This pump wasn't leaking. So I asked him, I said, I think industry standards really dictate from the consumer's point of view for you to go give the shop owner the first chance to make this right. You should go over to the shop owner and talk to him and say, I came in, the belt was off. Your guy said it was the water pump. I asked for my old one back. Everybody tells me there's nothing wrong with this. You told me the belt was old. I looked at the belt. It was really old. I think it just broke. I don't think it had anything to do with the water pump. I would really like you to refund my money on the water pump and the labor. And let give the shop owner a chance. And if he says no, then take your water pump and your repair bill and your old belt to the Attorney General's office, the fraud division, and let them handle it. There's lots of things that you can do. I got another guy who took a car in and he thought he had a clutch problem and they did a bunch of clutch work and he's out $1,000. And the whole issue has to do with the flywheel. They told him the flywheel was bad, which opened the door for the clutch. Then when he asked for the old flywheel back and he looked at it and he took it a couple of places, everybody said there's nothing wrong with this flywheel. So here's the deal. During the diagnostic process, the shop went in door A, but wanted to go into door A because door A has the expensive stuff. And in order to do that, they have to focus at the clutch. So when they get to door A, they say, I think it's in the clutch and da-da-da-da-da. And then you open the door and say, go ahead, which is, you don't have a choice. They go into room A and they go, oh, your flywheel's bad. So they put the flywheel on. And this guy had a starting problem. And then after, at the end of a week, they put a new starter in and the problem solved. And he says, you told me the flywheel was bad. And then all of a sudden it's changed now. It was this and now it's that. I'm not involved. The guy called me and I gave him advice on what to do. But the idea is you need to take care of yourself. And if you're dealing with a shop you've never dealt with before, then just start with small jobs. Always pay with a credit card. You have the upper hand. If you come to my shop and you do $700 worth of work and you pay with your MasterCard or your Visa, and then all of a sudden we get in a dispute, you can file a charge against me with MasterCard or Visa and say, hey, he's not cooperating in this investigation. He won't answer my questions or whatever. And MasterCard or Visa is going to send me a letter and say, Mark, we're going to put a hold on this $700. What am I going to do? Tell MasterCard or Visa to go pound sand? You think I'm capable of that? You think your shop's capable? Is even Walmart capable of telling MasterCard or Visa to get out of here? Of course they aren't. So you're going to cooperate. And unfortunately for guys like me in the repair business, they find for the customer about 60% of the time. And maybe that's okay. And I got to tell you that I've had a couple of those myself. But you have that. But if you pay cash or you write a check, you don't have that ability. You don't have anybody to go to bat for you. And those are kind of the things that I want you to worry about. I have never in my life had more calls in a week or a month in all my 30 years of car repair and my since 1988 in the media, television and radio, than I have in the last 2 months. It is clear that you're taking your car in for what you perceive as something small. I got a little bit of a coolant leak, and all of a sudden you need all the freeze plugs, you need the water pump, you need the radiator, you need all the hoses, and now we got a $2,000 bill. You need to get a second opinion. You just need to do that. Take care of yourself that way. Now, if you have a car question Monday through Friday, Saturday, Sunday, I don't care. My email address is mark@marksalem.com. Mark with a K at MarkSalem, Salem is like the cigarette, .com. You can send me an email question anytime you want. I answer all my emails. The list of shops that I suggest that you consider for car repair, I don't take that responsibility lightly. There's lots of what we call referral networks out there the referral networks, you'll recognize them. You know, Angie's List, GarageFly, Dex, Kudzu, NARPRO, RepairPal, To Fix It, Yelp, Your Auto Network. These are places that say our guys are the best. We all say the same thing. Here's the difference. The difference is I've kicked shops off my list for bad behavior, and none of those guys have. The second thing is I'm putting my money where my mouth is. I've got $5,000 of my money, and let me tell you how the math works. That's 7 years of dues for every shop. I'm not charging them hardly anything for the website and the maintenance of the website. But it would take 7 years, and I'm going to kick the shop off, which means I'll never have the opportunity to get that 7 years from him or her. So the idea is I'm telling you, you're going to be happy according to the Better Business Bureau, because I'm going to make you happy. If they tell him to make you happy and he doesn't, I will. Nobody else does that. If you go to marksalem.com, you can read about the two shops I recently removed. One of them was for both of them were ethical issues. And one of them had to do with a pricing issue. And it's pretty amazing, some of the pricing issues. It started off with a $1,000 radiator. And then when the customer kind of said, what? Then it went to a $600 radiator. And then the customer said, thanks, but no thanks. I can get it over here for $300. And the shop says, oh, no, you can't. Our cost is $300 on the radiator. So the customer goes over to the other shop, and I'm going to give him Caduce, Westside Radiator, $300. So he went back to the shop and says, I did it for $300. He says, no, my cost is $300. So the investigation team looked at it and said, you know what? The cost on the radiator is $270 list price through the dealer. So it's true that there's a $300 radiator out there, but there's also radiators that we have access to that were $100 that we sell for $150. So he was quoting the customer price as his cost, which was not true. So there's lots of games that play out there, and the difference between them and me is that, first of all, I'm here to help you. I have a track record of 20 years. Helping and being a consumer advocate. But more important than ever is that I'm not like the rest of them. I'm a little bit tougher. I'm the principal of this school, and they all know it. But I've got a good group, and these people do it the right way. They fix your car the right way. They don't take advantage of you. The other day, a shop called me and said, I got a complaint. I gave the guy $1,200, and he's happy. And I said, I hadn't heard about it yet. They said, that's why we gave him the money. That I said, will $1,200 make you happy? He said, yes. He said, thank you. That's the way they work. They know the difference between right and wrong, and no one is only half of it. You got to do right and wrong. See you next Saturday here, 10 o'clock till noon, right here, next Saturday. See you then.
This was a paid program and was provided